Our next speaker is Susanna Wiggins. She'll be bringing us a presentation on single nucleotide polymorphism, SNP, marker-assisted breeding and stability analysis of low phytate soybean.
Thank you very much, Dr. Shannon. Before I go any farther, I would like to recognize the co-authors on this project with me, Dr. Dennis West, Dr. Dean Kopsel, Dr. Carl Sams, and Dr. Vince Pantalone, who is my major professor. In plain words, the way I like to summarize my project is that we are using marker-assisted selection to help produce a low phytate soybean line. So I'll start off telling you a little bit about phytate. It is a mixed cation salt of phosphorus. It has 9 negative charges on the compound. And up to 70% of these seeds, whether it's soybean, up to 70% of soybean phosphorus is phytate. About 30% of the remaining phosphorus in soybean is inorganic phosphorus and some other forms of the mineral. Now, with these 9 negative charges, they like to bind to other minerals, most notably magnesium, calcium, some potassium, and a few others. And this can cause a problem with non-ruminant livestock. They do not break down these bonds very easily. Then the phytate is not absorbed into their digestive tract and is excreted. And this can cause problems later down the road, which I will talk about. Now, different producers have thought of different ways to help combat the problem. The most notable is importing phytase and adding it as a feed additive. This has to be imported from China and Europe. And the main problem with it is that it's an additional cost to producers. Now, not only can this cause problems by not breaking down the phytate, it can also cause some mineral deficiencies because it's bound to other minerals. Additionally, the Chesapeake Bay Commission has named phosphorus as one of 4 main pollutants of the Chesapeake Bay. And agriculture has also been cited as one of the non-point sources for those pollutants in the Bay watershed. On Maryland's eastern shore, chickens outnumber people 1,000 to 1, so you could see where this is a problem. But additionally, Maryland isn't one of the top producing areas for poultry or swine. So if you think of places like Iowa and North Carolina, the problem is just further compounded. Now, why it's such a problem is that when the phytate enters watersheds through whether it's runoff or soil leaching, it causes some problems with eutrophication. And when eutrophication happens in water, it decreases dissolved oxygen content, which is detrimental to different aquatic life. Now, there's been several ways, including the phytase that I've talked about, for combating the problem. There's also been the increased use of cover crops to help keep the phosphorus and phytate in the soil, as well as some folks at the University of Guelph have helped to breed what they call the EnviroPig, who EnviroPig synthesizes phytate in its salivary glands to help break down those bonds before they ever enter the digestive tract. But at the University of Tennessee, we thought that adding breeding for a low phytate line would be a very helpful goal in our breeding program. So in order to actually create the low phytate line, we crossed 5601T, one of our Czech cultivars that has been released recently, with the CX1834-1-2 line, which was developed by Wilcox et al. And in my project, we are comparing the recurrent parent, 5601T, to the back cross line because we were using the back cross method to produce this line. And we've named the back cross for TN09239. Now, we had several different ways of helping with our selection. We've used a colorimetric assay, and we also use marker-assisted selection. When this project first began, we were using single-sequence repeats, or SSRs, on SATT 561 and 237. However, we've made some changes since I came to the program. Not because of me, but it just happened to be a timing coincidence. But before I talk more about that, I'd like to talk about my field design. I had two tests. The first one is in Tennessee, and we are comparing the recurrent parent as well as the backcross 2, 3, and 4 lines, although I'll only talk about the backcross 4 line in my presentation. I had three replications at three locations across the state. And then I had what I call my USDA Southern test, and it is the USDA Southern Uniform Preliminary Group 5 test that we entered my two lines into, and we had two replications at 11 locations throughout this test. So as you can see on the map, the red thumbtacks are the locations in Tennessee, Knoxville, Highland Rim, and Milan, and then all the blue spots on there are the locations within the USDA Southern test. My methods of analysis, first of all, we wanted to check for inorganic phosphorus, and the reason that we're looking at inorganic phosphorus is because it is inversely proportionate to phytate, and so we're using an assay adapted from Chen's assay. It's been adapted by Rayboy et al. We were looking at fatty acid analysis through gas chromatography, looking at protein and oil content through the near-infrared reader. We have a FOS6500. And lastly, this was the change in our marker-assisted selection. We are assaying for single nucleotide polymorphisms. Try saying that 10 times fast, and you'll decide to start calling them SNPs, too. So the assay that we used is called the Simple Probe Assay for SNPs and Melting Curve Genotyping. I'd like to talk first about the inorganic phosphorus colorimetric assay. Its main purpose is to detect the amount of inorganic phosphorus levels. So it's helpful for us to know how much phytate through the inorganic phosphorus we have in our different lines. However, it does not test for the low phytate gene. And actually, there are several studies, including one by Altman's et al. And Rayboy, that says that we actually have two loci that that code for the low phytate that's found on chromosome 3, otherwise known as linkage group N, and that contributes to about 41% of the gene expression for phytate, low phytate, or normal. And then there's one on chromosome 19, which contributes for about 11% of the phytate expression. And then when you have the two together, it can contribute to another 11%. So when we see this, we don't necessarily know which genes we have captured and how much effect they're having. And this is also a post-harvest assay. We have to wait till we've got the beans in the lab. Now, this is a standards plate, and this we run beforehand to compare to our actual assay. And generally, 5601T is the color of the second column, and this shows we measure this in nanograms of inorganic phosphorus. And we're looking for low phytate as the dark blues, so your columns 6, 7, and 8 is usually what we're looking for a low phytate line. We also run it for a standard curve, and we've been having some successful results with an R-square value of 0.99. Now, when you move on to your marker-assisted selection and you're looking at SNPs, I like to think of it as we're looking at the DNA. You've got the twisted ladder, as we called it in my high school biology class, and you have the nucleotides as the rungs. So say, for example, that figure number 1 was your normal phytate, so CTA are the nucleotides with their complements, and low phytate, we'll say, is number 2, and it's TTA with its complements. That one base pair change is your single nucleotide polymorphism. And we've learned the names for them, or named them confirm QTL PHA001 for chromosome 3 and 002 for chromosome 19. And this was all found by Skibu et al. And Walker et al. And there's some advantages for changing over from SSRs to SNPs. First of all, it's a pre-harvest assessment. You can take leaf tissue samples and run these in the lab before harvest. This could help you out, especially if you have a big program, to know ahead of time what selections you're going to make for the winter nursery. So it's nice to know those things ahead. It's also a faster data collection, and the actual assay is more cost-effective compared to other marker-assisted selection methods. Now, when we do this, we do the polymerase chain reaction first to get a large enough sample size, and then we heat them up, and the DNA melts apart at the phytate locus, and it gives us these melting curves. So this one would be for normal phytate on chromosome 19, and I will say you have to run this assay both for chromosome 19 and chromosome 3. And as you can see here, this one melted apart at about 62 degrees Celsius, and it differs a little bit for chromosome 3, but to save time, we're going to just look at chromosome 19. A low phytate gene will, on chromosome 19, will melt apart at 56 degrees Celsius. But since we've got two loci that control or contribute to this, sometimes you're going to see heterozygous at one or both loci, and that's what this would look like. So for my results, first of all, we looked at the inorganic phosphorus assay, and we ran this through a mixed model in SAS for the least squared means. And as you can see, we got some expected results. The normal phytate has a low amount of inorganic phosphorus, and low phytate has very high inorganic phosphorus for both tests. So then we looked at the USDA test a little bit closer, and the USDA test can be split up into several different regions. And as you can see, again, normal phytate, low inorganic phosphorus, low phytate, high inorganic phosphorus, but there may be some concerns for stability across environments. We haven't gotten to that point of analysis yet, but it's something we are definitely going to investigate. And when we look at agronomic traits, anything highlighted in orange says that the back cross for the low phytate line was significantly lower than the recurrent parent. So as you can see, we have that problem with yield. And that is something that we're hoping to help to overcome in further back crosses, back cross 5 and 6 are in the works right now. And then you see significant higher in things like height. And I will talk about that in just a few minutes. Looking at seed quality traits, the grams per 100 is your seed size. In the USDA test, we see a little bit of significantly higher in protein and less in oil, which is to be expected since they're inverse. Fatty acids, we have higher palmitic and stearic acids, which could be problematic for someone breeding for low trans fat, because you can only have 7% trans fats in your soybean. So it might be something of concern to someone else in this particular project. It's not a main focus. Of course, when you see elevations there, you also see a decrease in other fatty acids, including linoleic and linolenic. So some future considerations. One of them is germination investigation. Some studies by Spear and Fair and Altman's showed some germination issues. However, further investigation by Anderson and Fair said that that was due to low phytate lines being susceptible to seed storage fungi. So that might need a further investigation, although we didn't notice germination issues per se. And the other would be indeterminate growth habits and possible linkage. I noticed in my back cross 3s and some in my back cross 4, the line that we've investigated here, that we had some segregation for determinant and indeterminate growth pattern. And if you remember from that SNP, you know, we had the melting curve and there was a little bump behind it. We're thinking perhaps there might be a linkage there. So at this time, I'd like to thank everyone involved in the soybean breeding program at University of Tennessee and at our research and education centers, and the granting agencies for this project, the United Soybean Board and the Consortium for Plant Biotechnology Research. And I'd like to thank you all for your interest and attentiveness and ask for any questions. I think it was because the original cross was made in the early 2000s, and I'm not sure when all different lines came out, but I think that influenced the decision in the first place. It was before my time.